I'm the great pretender.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable on this Friday morning. It is the 18th of November, and it's a delight to have you. Thank you for spending some time with us this Friday morning. We have a wonderful panel assembled, and we'll get to talking about the issues of the day, and there's quite a bit to talk about, as there always is. We welcome your comments, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. That's a new email address, and we know you'll use it, and we hope that you do. Let me introduce the panel. WAMC's Alan Chartog is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey. So who's the great pretender?
Oh, I'm not saying. I'm going to let everybody guess who the great pretender.
Okay. Just checking.
Who the great pretender is. And then the next one I asked that he play was My Prayer, also by the Platters. And you'll have to guess at what my prayer is.
Okay.
So
All right. There
you are.
All good. Director of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany, Rosemary Armeo, is with us.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. I'm preparing for a talk tonight at the Alpaca Gallery that I hope some people might turn out for. It's going to kind of be a rant with pictures.
Oh, good.
Yes.
No, there's a time.
Where is the Alpaca Gallery?
It's Russell Sage College, and it's
on New Scotland.
Yeah, you
New
just Scotland. Go to the end of New Scotland, right? And it's right there.
Yeah, you'll,
to
you
your
go where all the
nice
hospitals.
Modern
building that yeah. looks different from
a,
the other buildings.
A beautiful art gallery.
You go where all the hospitals and law schools are, and then it's right there. Yeah,
on the left if you're coming from downtown.
This is very cool.
And
there's
hopefully
like,
you'll.
Oh, so, yeah. Sorry, Alan. They pick some people, and you get 20 slides, and they show the slide, and you have 20 seconds to talk about, and then it moves on to the next one. So it's all very fast. And then they give you food and stuff to drink, too.
All right.
I bring in my mother, my sister. We're just going to chow down.
Sounds great.
Wow. And hopefully you'll get a lot of the overflow from, you know, from our event. Joe will tell you about that for a moment, won't you, Joe?
I will, although isn't that – are we – we're done with that event, though, right? Am I wrong?
Oh, no, we're sold out.
Yeah, that's what I thought. We have the Capital Steps event.
Yeah. Yes.
Tonight at the Egg at 7 o'clock. And so that's very exciting. And they'll be singing about...
the apocalypse.
Yes.
You couldn't figure out the word.
That's
you couldn't
right.
quite find the word. Yeah.
It was easier to sell 2 weeks ago when we were on. But yes, they'll be singing about the apocalypse. Well, far from that, this morning we welcome we welcome Barbara Smith, author and activist and dear friend. And we're thank you for being here, as always. Very
good.
Nice to have you.
Thank you and good morning.
Thank you. All right. Well, we have a lot to get to, a lot about appointments, a lot about people who are in the running for various jobs within the Trump administration. So let's just go down the list, all right? We'll start going through and see what you make of all this. The news that came out about an hour ago is that Donald Trump has picked Jeff Sessions to be U.S. Attorney General. He has offered Jeff Sessions the post of Attorney General, according to officials close to the transition. You will remember we talked about Jeff Sessions earlier in the week as being a man who was denied a federal judgeship in 1986 because of racially charged comments. However, with that and certainly with that greatly discussed over the past week, the appointment still made Trump, well, the job was offered to Jeff Sessions for Attorney General. Alan, I'll go to you, and then I know Barbara has a lot to say on this as well.
I'm actually very interested in what Barbara and Rosemary have to say about this, but it is clear, if you are a Freudian, I am, and you believe character doesn't change, you know, after 4 years of age, then we know what we got. We got a guy who refers to black people as boy and does worse things than that. and the United States Senate turned him down for a judgeship at one point. He gets elected in Alabama, surprise, surprise, and he becomes a, or as they say on the Beeb, Alabama. And he sits in that that spot for a long, long time. He is going to be an enforcer for Donald Trump. He's going to be a guy who reminds me of that time when Trump was at his rally and the guy started up and he said, "Okay, let him go," and then he says, "No, beat him up." That's the kind of mentality we have. Now, we went through McCarthyism in this country, and I'm scared to death that we're going to see it again, one way or another, and this will be the guy who is in charge of that.
Barbara.
While Alan is talking and you also introducing this, I'm feeling actual fear because
sure.
I just feel like a person with his perspectives who couldn't pass muster for a federal judgeship to be head of criminal justice and the and law enforcement in the entire nation. It's just, I don't even know what to say or how to say it, but it's just so frightening. I mean, to go from Eric Holder to Loretta Lynch to this, and when we have the kinds of issues that we do with the criminal justice system in relationship to black people in the United States, black and brown people, Muslims, people, immigrants, documented or undocumented. It's just completely frightening. I'm looking at the story in the New York Times, and it said that Mr. Sessions has referred to the NAACP, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, and other civil rights groups as un-American and communist-inspired. An African-American federal prosecutor, Thomas H. Figures said Mr. Sessions had referred to him as boy and testified that Mr. Sessions said the Ku Klux Klan was fine, quote, until I found out they smoked pot, end quote. Mr. Sessions dismissed that remark as a joke. So I don't know where the Xanax is, but I really do need some.
I despair of the very good work that came out of the Holder and Lynch administrations, looking at the way police departments operated in our
right.
cities. Of course, we have a problem indicting or holding police to account when they go before grand juries, which are run by people they have to work with and in front of citizens who feel like they need their protection. But these were that the attorney general came in and looked systematically at places like Baltimore and Ferguson. And I fear that will go away.
Right.
Will cameras on police officers now be a thing of the past? I would be cowering. And also, for those of you telling me to heal and stop being divisive and apocalyptic, two out of the three appointments now are openly racist people.
Yeah, you're talking about, of course, Steve Bannon. I was reading an article. I was on the Southern Poverty Law Center website earlier this morning, and there was a link to an article about the officer who shot and killed Philando Castile, mm-hmm. getting, sorry that I got to do something with my phone.
That's all right. That's okay.
The film started, little video started playing. I didn't want to interrupt myself. But in any event, that he got, he's being tried now for manslaughter.
Second degree manslaughter.
Yeah,
right.
And that's in Minnesota.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
I knew that story had come out earlier this week, of course, with all the Trump, related stuff. We didn't really hear much about it, but this is dire, and I'll be looking to see what our major civil rights and civil liberties organizations say. I want to know what the strategies are, because all it's going to be about is holding the line. And
yep.
then if you have a Supreme Court that just backs up everything, it's really quite astounding.
We have a lot more to discuss as far as the people here. But Alan, what about confirmations? I mean, obviously you're dealing with a Republican Senate, but there still is rancor there. Is there any hope for some of those with great concerns about these picks when it comes to the actual confirmations?
Well, I would say slim to none. However, and this is where it gets interesting. You got John McCain, You got Rand Paul. You've got a lot of people. Remember, and I think Barbara will confirm this, that the people in the southern states who used to be out-and-out racist and used to get elected that way now recognize that they have a substantial black population. And if stuff comes out in the hearings, and, you know, people bring things to hearings. Unfortunately, the hearings are going to be run by the people who are trying to get them confirmed. So, but the Democrats will be well armed. I am sure people will be funneling them stuff. They get to ask questions, and I would still stick by my earlier statement, slim to none. But you never know what's going to show up.
Well, what we're seeing.
I wonder how you feel about that. Yeah,
I'm sorry, Alan.
Go ahead.
What we're seeing is that the kind of morass, ethical, political. Every way you can think, but particularly ethical and political morass you get when you have a nation that has really never dealt with the impact of and the meaning of white supremacy. So what you're describing is a possible scenario when people in the Senate will raise issues about his record, and people will be confused. People are often confused about, is it racism or is it not? Was it a joke or was it a real attack? A really discriminatory and racist remark. I just think that the confusion around what race and racism is and how it manifests itself could indeed be confusing as far as the outcome and lead to a negative outcome for those of us who are the targets.
You know, I don't think there's any question that what you say is right. And I'm going to suggest something to you that maybe you won't like or others won't like. But that is, even the despicable things that the guy has said up to now do not, in my mind, constitute enough to deny him the nomination. Yeah, we know these are racist statements, and therefore one would say he's racist. But it would have to take more than what we know already to get him off the spot. The problem, of course, is that if you get rid of him, they'll just find another.
That's right. And the thing is, that's a slippery slope of unexamined racism. There's no agreed upon standards or definitions. People who are the targets of it see it one way. People who are allies and who are anti-racist probably see it in a similar way. And then there's all the rest of us. And when you have that all together in a hearing room, who knows what you're going to get?
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the other appointments that have been made.
They are no better.
All right.
Well, oh my God. Agreed.
Michael Flynn.
Those are terrible. However, I'm real interested in the Mitt Romney thing. Really.
All right.
He's not appointed to anything, though. That could all have been. I mean, he had Henry Kissinger in there. He's not going to put Henry Kissinger to anything.
All right. He's just talking. Let me just go
Sorry,
through
you
these.
You want to do this orderly, don't you? Okay.
Going to try, but that's all right. Michael Flynn, Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, a retired intelligence officer, has been offered the post of National Security Advisor. And Mike, is it Pompeo?
Don't know.
Pompeo? P-O-M-P-E-O, who gained prominence for his role in the congressional investigation into the 2012 attack in Benghazi, has been said to be the CIA pick, head of the CIA. So now, your thoughts on those two, as you say, Rosemary.
Who do you want first?
You know, Michael Flynn. Let's do him, Alan. He's the one who worries me the most. I think he's just a little off. I mean, there's no question that he has experience and knows intelligence. But this is a guy who took off to the surprise of many of his friends and associates and goes over and sits down with Putin and talks about how great he is, appears in propaganda appearances on Russian-owned state television with Putin. This is the same guy who, according to NSA, interfered in our elections, tried to disrupt our elections. I find this very troubling. Am I alone?
My understanding, too, is that he is one of the prime public Islamophobes in the nation. Incredibly Islamophobic.
Well, he's not the number one, Barbara, but Trump is also talking to the number one guy.
Who is?
Okay, I knew you were going to ask me that. Come back to me in a minute. Alan, fill in.
He was one of them. I didn't say he was number one.
Okay.
I said he was one of the prime.
Yeah.
Well-known.
He tweeted in February, "Fear of Muslims is rational. Please forward this to others. The truth fears no questions."
And he believes, I think, in Sharia law. That Sharia law is being imposed in the United States.
Yeah. Well, Newt Gingrich was also promoting that idea that Texas was trying to install Sharia law. Crazy. Okay, I have to find that name for you.
All right. Yeah. Alan, your thoughts on this, Steve?
Well, you know, it's scary. I think I'm going to go off on a little tangent here, and that is, Barbara brought it up, and that is the Russian thing. I believe that if people are thinking about something that could eventually get this president impeached, it is the Russian connection. And I do think that that is something that a lot of people, investigative journalists and others, will be working on. Unfortunately, the Russian system, as you know, is so closed that it's very hard to get information out of there. That's a country, Rosemary, right? That journalists disappear, get shot, whatever.
I know some of the best investigative journalists in the world, however, work in Russia. So it is not impossible.
I hope you're right.
And I can assure you that, yes, they are indeed looking into this. The guy I was thinking of, by the way, whose name escaped me, Frank Gaffney,
who's one
of his advisors. He's the most notorious of the Islamophobes, and he's helping to select national security advisors. So Flynn isn't the number one, but he's been approved by the number one.
Right.
So that's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
All right. And so let's do some, I got some letters here, and then we'll come back. And then we do want to talk about Mitt Romney and the meeting that will take place tomorrow. Barbara writes, "The Americans with Disabilities Act was passed in 1990, yet the most vulnerable of our population are still discriminated against. Senator Schumer and Congressman Gibson have introduced the Disability Integration Act, which is a civil rights legislation addressing the fundamental issue that people who need long-term services and supports are forced into institutions, losing their basic civil rights. How can we trust that a president who publicly mocks a disabled person will give this bill even an ounce of consideration?"
That's a really good question.
Or, as I answer six-page letters, indeed.
Tim writes, "Earlier in the week, Rich Honan said on the roundtable that not all Trump supporters are racist, which I agree. However, how are the targets of racism supposed to feel towards people who vote for and support a racist?" I'd be interested in hearing Barbara's perspective on this.
Well, there's something, I don't know if this is relevant to the question, but there was something I'd been thinking about last week, and that I'm going to try to talk about right now, which is the relationship between kind of passive racism, our passive racist, and those who are more active and out there. I think that this election is a perfect example of how people who don't really necessarily have any ill will about issues of race or toward people of color can still do things or act in certain ways or ignore certain things that indeed lead to really negative outcomes for those of us who are targeted. There's a wonderful book, and I think this is the right citation because I read it in college, so we're talking about 50 years, literally 50 years ago. But the thing is, there's a book that's called Caste and Class in a Southern Town, and I think that's by John Dollard. I hope I have his first name correct. But what he talks about in this sociological, perhaps anthropological study of a pre-civil rights smaller southern city is that it's the upper classes that make it possible for the lynch mobs to function by just turning an eye. Yes.
I have to take a break because we're just up against the BBC, but we'll come back. We'll continue that conversation and much more. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
When the twilight is gone, and no songbirds are singing, when the twilight is gone, you come into my heart, and here in my heart you will stay while I pray.
My prayer is to linger with you at the end of the day in a dream that's divine.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Barbara, I interrupted you to go to the break, and I want to give you an opportunity to finish up on your thought.
Well, I did verify during the break that the author of the book that I mentioned is indeed John Dollard. And as I said, the title is Caste and Class in a Southern Town. And as I said, it really went into interesting detail about how people, you know, who were the ruling class of this town, by ignoring, not prosecuting, enabling, were absolutely instrumental in the on-the-ground terrorism that people, the white people of lower classes, were perpetrating against black citizens. So, as I said, it was a really interesting book when I read it during my college years, and I see some connections now because, as I said, there's confusion about what people's relationship is to the system of white supremacy because, as I have often said in hundreds of speeches, in hundreds of places, usually college campuses, but other places too, is that in this nation, people think if I don't have a can of gasoline, a white sheet, and a wooden cross stored in my garage, I'm not a racist. That's what they think the definition is. And if that's what the definition is, then many things happen without accountability.
Right. I want to talk about
the line.
Yeah,
that's, I like the line
good.
About the gasoline in the garage. I may plagiarize that, Barbara.
Oh, please. Feel free.
Pass
but don't
on.
Forget the white sheet and the wooden cloth.
Yeah, that's good. No, I was taking notes. That's good.
Let's talk about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney is expected to have a meeting with the president-elect tomorrow. Of course, Mitt Romney was really very much against Donald Trump during the campaign, was even thought at one point to be someone who would enter the race to quote-unquote save the Republican Party. So now he is meeting with Donald Trump to discuss the possibility of being Secretary of State. At least that is the reports coming out of the Trump Tower late yesterday and early this morning. Alan, what do you make of Mitt Romney and politics making strange bedfellows?
Well, Joe, I think it would be a brilliant appointment. I really do, because in the same way that you had a John Kerry, a former presidential candidate like Mitt Romney, who also had his differences with other major people, or Hillary Clinton, who certainly had her differences with Barack Obama. And especially when you're appointing people of the kind we have been talking about, to the very right of the Republican Party, who have racist overtones to them. Romney would look like a moderate and would be, of course, a sop to many of the people who are looking for any kind of reassurance whatsoever that we're not entering a Joe McCarthy period, which I believe we are, by the way. And it would be a brilliant appointment if he did it. Why he would do it, I don't know. I mean, that talk, it seems to me, is going to be pretty important in that, Trump is going to say, I want to lay out the parameters. I want to lay out what goes on, and if Romney is willing to live with that, that would be, I think, the best of his appointments.
Well, I don't know why he would take it. I mean, the men share interesting tax policies. Maybe that's it. He's going to look for tax tips or something. But it doesn't fit at all. Romney, if you will recall, was the one in debates with Obama and in the campaign against Obama, came out strongly against the dangers of the Soviet Union, for which I have since praised him. He was right. And Obama trying to move past Russia into looking at the Pacific the Pacific Rim has been stymied, and Russia is definitely a danger. And Romney feels this. So how does that square with our new president's view that the Russians can be our friends, that we can work together? Very interesting.
And Romney, the reason
we like him, Alan, let's not forget, is that he was the first and the loudest and the one most unlike Paul Ryan in calling out Trump as an unqualified, miserable choice for president. So now he's going to make
them. True.
So it's a very bizarre pairing.
And we don't know if he'll be appointed to anything anyway. But the optics for him having this meeting with that individual who lives at Trump Tower, the optics of that are to the incoming administration's advantage.
You are right.
So it looks okay. You know, it looks like, but then, you know, he may indeed not be appointed to anything or want to be appointed to anything or agree to be appointed, or he might be appointed and be completely neutralized because he's surrounded by people
who
have very different perspectives.
Yeah, that's all true. And you're both right about that. On the other hand, one of the good reasons for Trump to do this would be if he really wanted, and remember that more than half the country didn't vote for him. And there are a lot of very angry people out there who are just, you've got at least the million people who are going to show up on the 21st. You've got an awful lot of problems. And here is the ultimate guy who believes in the art of the deal. And I don't think substance is that important or philosophy is that important. I think he thinks he may need this. And that's why I would say there's a chance, and you're probably both right, that Romney would be appointed. It would be a brilliant move in my mind. I don't know that he'll do it.
And to Rosemary's point, and I guess, what does Romney get out of it? I mean, if he doesn't want the job...
Well, wait a second. What did John Kerry, a former presidential candidate, get out of it? There's a lot of – what did Hillary Clinton get out of it?
Wait. That's not true. Both of them, Alan, spent years doing this kind of outreach to other countries. That's not true at all with John – with.
I'd just like to finish my sentence, if I may, Rosemary.
So sorry.
I'd just like to finish the sentence, if I may. And that is that there is always the next chapter in any politician's life. It is a huge thing. After being president – I believe being Secretary of State is right up there. And when you say, what would he want out of it, he'd want this to be that next chapter.
Are you ready? Do you want to speak?
We'll see.
I made my point in the middle of his sentence. So,
okay.
Sorry. I'll back down now.
All right. Let's go to some letters, and we'll go to John, who writes, good morning, panel. Like many, I think the election results mark a turning point in our country, and not in a good way. A functional democracy requires an informed electorate, and that clearly is missing. In the U.S., roughly half of eligible voters don't ever vote, and a significant number that do get their facts from Fox News or right-wing social media. The significant number of sexist, racist, and ill-informed citizens in this country is appalling.
And I would just like to say I agree when people say that not everybody who voted for Trump was indeed a racist. I think that that's objectively accurate. It's just that you have to think about, and that they were motivated most signally by racism. You just have to think about those. If you heard the things that he said about every conceivable group, including people with disabilities, et cetera, women, et cetera, where is your mind at that that's okay with you? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, you may not call yourself a racist, but you have proved yourself willing to tolerate racism, misogyny, sexism, all the rest of it.
Or overlook it. Yeah, tolerate and overlook. Yeah.
So those who are not willing to do that, people have been sending me notes and asking the station about the Women's March on January 21st. Can I give a contact?
Absolutely.
It is available on Facebook, which is the Women's March Hudson Valley Upstate Chapter. But some people are not on Facebook or don't use social media. So there's a person, an actual person you can contact. She lives in Woodstock. She's an artist, a young woman who's trying to help put together very rapidly a grassroots movement. Her name is Marianne Asta. She is reachable at Marianne with an E, M-A-R-Y-A-N-N-E, Asta, A-S-T-A, at yahoo.com, or you can text her at 914-486-6449. They have buses running from most of the cities in the Hudson Valley, including Albany and Saratoga, which is not in the valley but nearby, and prices for the bus ride and where they leave, and she can help you with all of that. And they are also trying to figure out a way, in addition to PayPal, that they can take money from people who may not be able to go but want to support somebody else to go who has time but no money. So does that help?
That's a great help. And okay. We'll take that information from you and get it on our website with the panel so people can find it if they want to find out more. There's also some local activity going on as well this weekend, right?
Right. Tomorrow there's going to be a rally against Trump's 100 days agenda. And the description of the rally in March is Stand United with Muslims and Immigrants. It starts tomorrow, Saturday the 19th, at 1:30 p.m. in Townsend Park. That's a park at the intersection of Central and Washington Avenues. I always think of it as a little triangle in the middle of those two streets. So as I said, starting at 1:30, and then there will be a march up Central Avenue to the mosque that is on Central Avenue, not very far from our studio, actually. It's sponsored by the Capital District Coalition Against Islamophobia. That's a group that started last year following the Paris massacres. And I am active in the group, and there is a Facebook page, and there's also a on the flyer, which I think it would be okay to say the person's name since it's publicly on the flyer. You can contact Joe Lombardo, and his email address is jlombard@nicap.rr.com. So it's jlombard@nicap.rr.com. But as I said, there's a Facebook page too.
Let's,
Can I ask one more thing? Because
yes.
I now that I'm a conduit for information, as you are too, Barbara, I get lots of mail and responses from people on the other side, people who voted for Trump or say we should give him a chance, we're hysterics, all the stuff you're hearing too, Alan. And they go, well, what is it that you're marching for? What is the protest against? What rights don't you have? And I think that's an important question because I don't want to be like Occupy Wall Street, which was, whatever bothers us. We need to put this into a sentence or two, and I would love to hear what you think about that.
Well, I'm not getting those emails that you're getting because...
Of course.
I'm sure getting them, yeah.
Right. The thing is, unlike the rest of you, listeners to the show don't have my email address easily, the way it seems. I don't know exactly how that got arranged.
Through the university.
Yeah, but I'm quite fine. I'm fine with it. I'm fine with things the way that they are. And my knowing about these events is because of my involvement generally in the organizations and groups that are working on these issues over time, not in the last week or so. So I just wanted to make that clear. But I think that what we're concerned about is the erosion of all of the myriad gains and rights that we have achieved in the last 60 plus years. We can start with civil rights, voting rights, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer rights, including marriage, Roe v. Wade, so many things that we kind of think that's the way America is these days. There's no reason to be sanguine, about or optimistic about whether those basic rights will be preserved. And I was, of course, involved with Occupy. I wasn't an organizer of Occupy. I think I hear what you're saying, and you can say more to explain to both me and others who are a part of our conversation this morning. I think what you're saying is that it was like they didn't necessarily have like a
They had no agenda.
Yeah, but the main thing that they brought to this fore was this concept of the 1% versus the 99%. And there was some criticism at the time from people who were had been involved in political organizing, over the years and decades, who were used to like, okay, what's the agenda? What's the platform?
You have to have an agenda.
Yeah, what's the strategy? There was some criticism and perhaps just differences of perspectives and frustration about how younger people were doing it. But at the end of the day, I think those of us who may And I didn't have those kinds of perspectives. I didn't have a critique per se of that kind. But I think those who did, and that I may share a generation with, at the end of the day, my feeling is that when people speak up about injustice, that's a plus.
Yeah, I get it. I think that movements work when there is a goal and you say, this is what we're fighting for. And so far, we're fighting against, and that's hard. That was what was wrong with Occupy Wall Street, and it's what's wrong with the Women's March in this very, very beginning stages.
And I would say that
we have I want to say one thing. We have a guy who writes to us every day, and most of the time, sometimes we read his stuff, sometimes not. But it's always the same thing. If people think that Rosemary and I are making it up, that we're getting a lot of these letters, let me just read you one line. Trump talk today at 9:29. It's because of paranoid hysterics such as yourselves that make me gleefully look forward to a Trump administration, and then says in the most mature way possible, ha ha. Just so that everybody knows they're there.
So last week...
And big time.
Last week, I'm sorry, we're talking over each other. I'm sorry.
Last week at
the Capital District Coalition Against Islamophobia meeting, where we began to talk about the rally and march that's happening tomorrow, that was, I believe, a regularly scheduled meeting of the group. There was someone who was sitting around the circle and was saying that they knew a woman here, probably in walking distance of where we are at this very moment, that this person knew a woman, a black woman, who was a Muslim, whose mother was terrified to leave the house now.
Oh, my God.
And this, the person, you know, the younger woman, the daughter, was, like, doing things to try to be helpful and supportive to her mother, who is now terrified to leave the house. They're both Muslim women. So that's real. That's not like, you know, that didn't happen. And then, of course, what we have to figure out then, is that important to us? Does that make any difference to us? Do we want to live in a country where people are cowering in their homes because and Muslim women, because they are visibly identifiable as being members of their faith?
And then the argument, Barbara, is, well, it's because of people like Alan Rosemary in the roundtable that's stirring up hysteria. He hasn't even been to office. Give him a time and then see. You're going to be surprised.
Well, I believe that credible media outlets are talking about, are having discussions about registration. It was Megyn Kelly who was like, she was like incredulous. That this, which individual, I can't keep them straight, which guy was on talking about registering and citing Japanese internment camps as a model for what we might want to create now. She couldn't believe it.
It was a precedent. FDR brought us this.
We're
you have to go, so.
Yes, we're very late for a break.
I kind of took over, sorry.
Yes, but that's okay. take a break. We'll be right back and continue our conversation after this. All right, got a few minutes till the news break. Let's do as many letters as we can here. Giuliani as AG was a bad dream, but Jeff Sessions is a full-blown nightmare. It's just another stark example of a rich old white man desperately trying to salvage their sinking ship. Eventually, they will drown in their own hatred of each other, says Bill. Bernie writes, looking at Trump's nominees leads me to ask the panel, do you think that sometime in the near future we'll be at war with an Islamic country? Alan?
Wait. There's one thing about a drowning man. We all know it. The drowning man often grabs on to other people around him and brings them under with him.
Brings them down with you, sure.
Yeah.
We're already at war with Islamic countries. Our people, our boats fired on... Yemen. We are involved in Afghanistan. We are involved in Iraq. We don't have to wait for him to come in to be at war with Islam.
Jesse,
Syria too, right?
Yeah, Syria. Well, we're supposed to be involved against ISIS there, but who knows what's happening now? The Russians are they have a whole different idea about what to do with Syria, and we maybe partners in that plan now or not. I don't know.
Jesse writes, when will you realize this election was a repudiation of PC culture and liberals being able to say ad hominems like racist, sexist, etc.?
So PC equals
racism.
Not being eviscerating in one's language or accents to those who are not white, male, cisgendered, straight, and well off.
This one's for you, Alan. Brian asks, if we are creeping toward McCarthyism, what can we do as a single citizen within our own lives to fight against it?
Well, look, first of all, I agree. I think we are going towards McCarthyism. I think we're going to see it from Jeff Sessions and the other people who, you know, who Trump is recruiting. And I, you know, it's not proportional to the results of the election. This is something that's making me nuts, if you think about it, right? Because she got more votes than he did. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. We know that. And yet, he is going so far to the right that it is not proportional to the results of the election, what, you know, what he's doing. And if we come out with a sort of McCarthyism, and by the way, you all know the poem, first they came for us, and then, you know, what's going to happen now? When they go for the Muslims, who comes next after the Muslims? It is not just poor Muslims, because it's a terrible thing that they're doing. It is also that once you pick out one group, it just starts that way. So there you are.
Paul writes, apparently Flynn was a registered lobbyist for Russia and Turkey while he was receiving top secret intelligence briefings after Trump's nomination. If true, wouldn't that constitute sale of national secrets, i.e. spying?
It was one of the reasons, his close ties with those two countries are one of the reasons that he was kind of pushed out of the position he had.
Lisa says, I'm appalled by the anti-Russia propaganda that continues even after Hillary Clinton lost the election. This propaganda began with her campaign before the Democratic convention in order to keep us from focusing on the true WikiLeaks revelations.
Wrong. Just totally wrong. It's Russians are the experts at propaganda. That's just open your eyes, please.
Alan, this is for you from Barbara. I love that you are open-minded about the possibility, but I believe Trump is out to humiliate Romney either by leading him on or later.
Well, you know, it could be. This is a guy who shows that kind of sadistic streak sometime. Nevertheless, if you're thinking about what is good for you, perhaps good for the country, perhaps good for reconciliation. Look, I know that I'm a small voice in the wilderness here, but I'm just telling you that if he does it, he's smarter than I think he may be, and you may well be right. You may well be right.
Michael says,
I'll give you that.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, too, I think is an example of that is people say that they believe that may be what he was doing to Chris Christie, of sort of leading him along and then casting him out. Michael.
Yeah, I think there's something else going on with Christie that we don't know about. I really do. I mean, I think what happened there was something happened. It may be the Bridgegate stuff is going.
Why do you think Carson and Newt Gingrich walked away, Alan?
I don't know.
Do you think something else?
Ideas?
No, I find it very odd. I'm wondering if you have a theory about it.
Well, my own feeling about Carson is better than Newt Gingrich. But I think Carson, when he said, you know, I'm not prepared for it, he was right. You know, he's a man who was running for president. That he was prepared for. Cabinet position he wasn't prepared for. But you know what? There are always other things that are going on that we don't know about. And there are going to be Senate hearings on each of these guys, and they are going to have to answer questions. And people are going to be sending those to the Democrats who are sitting on those committees. So the one thing about if you want to build a cabinet that has a lot of different perspective or the appearance of a lot of different perspective, then you nominate Mitt Romney. And it may well be that he doesn't. I'm not unaware of all the things you guys are saying.
Let's take a break. We'll be back, get some news, and we will return. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It's the 18th of November. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Barbara Smith make up the panel this morning. We have talked about a lot of possibilities within the Trump administration. We have not talked about Jared Kushner yet, and I do want to touch on that because it is being reported by the New York Times that Jared Kushner is looking to basically find a legal path of trying to circumvent any anti-nepotism law that would exist to have a job within the White House that would hopefully do away with legal challenges and political backlash, although that seems impossible, but yet. Do you want to go first, Rosemary? No?
Yeah, I'll go first. I was waiting for Alan to see if he wanted to jump in. I already cut him off once.
Well, I already talked about that once earlier today. Look, this law was passed as a reaction, apparently, to Bobby Kennedy being the attorney general. And I think Bobby Kennedy was a fine attorney general. And he had a relationship with the president. And obviously, you know, he was of enormous importance, Cuban Missile Crisis and other places. Now, and I suspect that this is a very tough law. It was written with no wiggle room whatsoever. So now the question is, are we going to be a nation of law breakers? In other words, we now are going to have an attorney general who is at the beck and call of the president and who is a right winger and the rest of it. Is there going to be a wink and a nod here? Because who's going to call him on it if they do put him in the White House? You know, they'll say, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, here's the big difference for me between the Kennedy situation of nepotism and this one. Bobby was not running the business that was the main income for the Kennedy family. There's a direct conflict of interest between what Jared Kushner does for a living and his family, and having a president in the White House whose business interests and our government's interests may probably have in the past coincided. We were told all along, no, I'm going to put the business in the hands of my children and the in-laws, and I'll be insulated from it. And in fact, what we're seeing now is that Ivanka met with the Prime Minister of Japan, and Jared Kushner is exploring ways to get a position in the White House himself. As totally aside from the fact that he seems singularly unprepared to be involved in anything in the federal government. He bought a newspaper and runs it like a fiefdom. And, oh yeah, he married Trump's daughter. That's it. That was not the case with Bobby Kennedy either, who was indeed a very good attorney general.
One of the things that so Alan is obviously talking about this. So 1967 law, the last time it was tested was when Hillary Clinton was named to be part of the health care reform of the Bill Clinton administration. Right. And federal judges, at least two, said that did not appear to cover appointments to the White House staff. So that seems to be what they're looking at here. The possibility of getting a White House job as opposed to
a cabinet department
right. job.
Right, indeed. I heard that he did not do that well at his private school. And then his father wrote a huge check and he got into Harvard. That's what I heard.
Could be fake news, though.
No, it's not.
I want the source on that. I have to be fair on this.
Yeah, yeah. It was not on a website. It was on... Well, I guess visual
it's
media could
yeah.
be just as bad.
I don't know.
Well, you know, legacies are legacies. You know, legacy students. I don't know. Actually, that wouldn't be a legacy. That was like his father writing the big check.
Meanwhile,
if it's true, and I think it's very important, I think Rosemary raises the right point, Barbara. Many of us want to believe a lot of this stuff. But there's all kinds of stuff that's out there that you know, hasn't really been.
Well, I guess, you know, my issue, like the reason that resonated with me is because I belong to a group that is always considered to be unqualified, particularly academically. So that just really kind of, you know, caught my attention because, you know, when I went to college, I always talk about my wonderful college, Mount Holyoke, but it was a very hard place to be as a black student back in the mid-1960s. And one of the things that made it hard is that we had professors, there were very few black women at Mount Holyoke at that time, but we had professors who made it very clear that they did not think we deserved to be there. And as I said, that just kind of resonated with me because of my personal relationship to
now we have
issues,
a president
to those
who's
issues.
Telling you that.
There you go.
Enough of this PC stuff.
Let's go back to some letters. We go to Cody, who writes, as much as I want Trump to succeed for the sake of the country, I think an abysmal Trump presidency might be even better. A successful Trump presidency normalizes his racist and misogynistic views, normalizes his sexual assault of women, and reinforces the idea that our leader should have absolutely no governmental experience. Larry writes, House Democrats are sticking with Nancy Pelosi because nothing says he will represent the forgotten middle America than a liberal San Francisco elitist. Apparently, the lessons of last week are safely forgotten. And that is, do we want to talk about Nancy Pelosi and Tim Ryan and the fight that perhaps is on there?
Yeah, I mean, we hit it yesterday, didn't we?
2 days ago,
yesterday. Yeah, no, Tim Ryan's making a couple of interesting points here. First of all, there's a sociological question. He's a guy and she's a lady. She's a woman. And one of the few who have risen to this position of power. So I think we have to put that on the table right then. But then also, Ryan's making an interesting point. We're not doing too good. And therefore, we really have to change the way we're looking at things. And maybe a guy from the Rust Belt or from Ohio, is it Ohio, Joe? I think he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Trumbull County.
Could lead us to where we need to go. He makes a point. I don't think this is as cut and dry as a lot of people would like. The people on the outside aren't, polling shows it, aren't in love with Nancy Pelosi. However, the people on the inside love her. Everybody on the congressional corner I talk to thinks she's great and that she's been a great leader. So we'll have to see.
I think Tim Ryan himself has said that he likes and respects Nancy Pelosi. I don't see this as an attack on her her gender. And I'm not even sure he wants the job. I think he would be perfectly happy to go back being a member under her control, but wants to raise the issue. On the other hand, I've said it before, I think she's had her chance and it's time now to move on to someone else.
That's kind of how I felt about it. It's not that I give much thought to her as the leader in the House, but reading the article, I thought, wow, there's some really good points here. She's been in for quite a long time, and the number of seats, Democratic seats in the Congress, has definitely significantly diminished. And the fact that he is from a part of the country where, where Trump seemed to have actually, it's not seemed to. He won Ohio, but where he has his base, I think it would be really, it could be really interesting. I don't know. I know nothing about the individual at all, but I just thought
he had
some interesting points.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, we're getting a lot of letters that I'm seeing here from people who want us to repeat things that have been said during the show already.
Yeah.
For example, where...
Yeah.
So I just hope you'll be able to tell everybody that where they can go to hear the whole show and any part of it after we're off the air.
Yeah, just go to our website. It's wamc.org/roundtable, and the link for the panel is there, and you'll find the information there as well. And there'll just be links. So we'll get you to where you need to go. There's a lot of them, so we're not going to put all of them up. But and by the way, just feel free to Google your area and you'll find exactly what you need. Back to letters. How does Trump get away with putting together a panel, Megan wonders, with no women and no people of color, especially when you consider what Trudeau did in Canada, which I personally thought was terrific and absolutely correct.
We made him president. He can do it.
Ditto.
He can do it, and I would have voted for Trudeau. I personally would have voted for Trudeau. They're not
right.
The same guy.
In my experience, most liberals embrace the PC culture, the same culture that shuts down opinions and points of view that differ. Sounds like a lot of fascism to me.
Can I just say something about that? We use terms often that we don't have agreed upon definitions for. And PC, or politically correct, is one of them. It's not mere political correctness, or it's not political correctness at all, to not be lobbying, recognize epithets at people who you consider to be less than. As I often say when this kind of thing comes up, why don't you just try being a black parent, having to explain to their child why some other child says, as was reported in the New York Times a few weeks ago, this playground equipment, whatever it was, this jungle gym or whatever, it's for only for white kids. Did anybody read that story?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So the thing is, when I think of like what we're trying to prevent from happening, that's what I think of. I don't think about you can't call me an N-word. No, you can't call me an N-word. But the thing is that I also think about what it's like to have to navigate your loved ones, particularly your children, through a society in which they can be treated and spoken about any old way. It was another little preschool age girl who said to the little preschool age boy, "You can't be on this. You can't be on this jungle gym. It's for white kids only."
We let's go back to some letters. Margaret writes that, paraphrasing what I heard in NPR yesterday, the best resistance is to live joyfully, commit random acts of kindness, and put your money where your mouth is by contributing to Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, journalists, and environmental groups, and you can donate in anyone's name, which is creative fun. I think we talked yesterday about a lot of donations being made in the name of Mike Pence.
You know, Joe, I'm thinking about this because I'm getting tons of letters saying, what should I do about creeping McCarthyism, for example, if that actually happens and that comes, and I think we're going to see it. Then it's a matter of courage, because the reason that McCarthyism worked so well is that people went into the sand, they put their heads in the sand, they went away, they hid behind trees. They didn't want anything to do with it because they knew they were next. So this is going to be a time for great personal, and I mean personal, courage. Because if people are going to do it the same way and say, oh boy, you know, my kid wants to get into college or whatever else, that's the end of it. That's the kiss of death.
Let's see. We have something. I thought there was another letter on that. I hear your references to McCarthyism and people with racist tendencies being appointed to cabinet posts. In the era of Black Lives Matter and the aftermath of the many marches and demonstrations around the country, do you really think that the new administration could get away with dismantling our current civil protections without opposition? And that from Susanna.
I think it'd be really easy.
I do too.
Very easy, because
yeah,
you see
too.
How different police departments in different locations respond to the very same kinds of activity, depending. So if you have from the very top the messaging that these are criminals, are, to quote that individual, professional demonstrators or professional protesters who have no rights. Think about what happened at his campaign events and how people were treated. I think it's really easy for that to degenerate.
I'm worried about the Million Woman March. I think that if you look at the way the Trump supporters are characterizing the protests that have arisen since the election, they're emphasizing burnings and property damage and injuries, and they've been
and
relatively
been
small, and
mm-hmm.
and no one condones that. Mm-hmm. None of this is about violence. So, yeah, I think that you could see. I keep calling it the, you know, they're gonna say martial law. We got to keep people safe, and that's the end of the First Amendment.
Jackie says, what do you do as Romney if the position were offered to him? Do you stand your ground and not support this megalomaniac in any way, or do you support your country and join the team as a moderate Republican? Alan?
Well, you know, I mean, I think, again, it's going to be something that Rosemary just said about the being worried about the people who are on the Million Women March. I think that's a place where courage shows. I mean, if somebody goes down there and says, even despite the fact that it will be then the Trump administration, Jeff Sessions will be the head of the Justice Department. The FBI, which we already know from the election, is tilting towards the Republican side of it, will be there. It's going to be a matter, I've said it again, I'm going to just say it one more time, of personal courage. You go on the march because it's the right thing to do, and you say, okay, I'll live with whatever comes. I don't see what else you can say.
Let's see. Mark says, isn't it interesting that Rosemary is asking for someone else to spell out an agenda or goal, like she and others there are joining these demonstrations and giving out information for others, have no idea what the specific agenda is or what exactly they are promoting or helping?
Oh, Can I say bite me on the radio? That's ridiculous.
I think you just did.
I wanted someone who is eloquent and...
You just can't say where.
Yeah. I want someone who's eloquent and who has experience in this to voice it in a way that other people would understand. I mean, I feel it viscerally. I think Barbara said it outright. Apparently, it didn't get through either to him. So
I missed the letter because I was handed a very interesting something on a certain person's smartphone. So I was reading it.
It's about the Jared Kushner thing. Our listeners are sending in information about how he got into Harvard.
But what was that letter that you were responding to?
I had to ask you what the march was about because I'm just blindly, like so many others, just blindly signing on for the thrill of it without any real commitment or understanding.
Did you have that impression?
Ooh. Did you have that?
No.
That's okay. Thank you. That's why I said bite me. Oh, I just said it again. Oh.
Anna says, I think we all need a weekend. Anna says, I hope all who voted against Trump unite to fight for each other's rights. We should all agree to stand up for the most vulnerable members of our society. Ron says, after 4 years of Trump, assuming he lasts that long, I think maybe those in our country who suffer from both voter apathy and social repression will make a serious effort to come out, register, and come out and vote. It appears that those who will be hurt most in our society by the probable regressive policies Trump and his new band of cronies are also guilty of not voting. Am I wrong?
As we often say, you have to give people something to vote for. And we had two very unpopular candidates in this cycle. The kind of inspiration that President Obama was able to engender during his first and arguably his second run for the presidency, that is unique in the individual. You know, not everybody is as charismatic as he is as a campaigner. But as I said, we have to give people things to vote for, which means people stepping up and shouldering some of this responsibility around our nation state.
Well, we are just about out of time. Anybody have anything else?
We're getting a fair amount of mail, as you say, Joe, about the Harvard gift. The jail sentence interrupted the father's jail sentence, Jared's trajectory. He had attended Harvard, a circumstance as a Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Daniel Golden described, and the price of admission may have been connected to a gift of $2.5 million that his parents pledged to the university.
And there you go. And a lot of this is coming out as we speak.
And there we went.
Yes, and there we went.
I was going to ask, do you think that Tim Ryan is an equal match to Paul Ryan with a full United Republican Congress behind him? That's one reason that Pelosi continues to be of interest to me. She knows how to play the game really well.
I see what you're saying.
You know?
You meaning you have that, you have that power and you have that...
Yeah.
You already have the relationships to bring people together.
Yeah, I wonder about that.
I don't know how well she's done, to be fair, Rosemary, you know, at that game. So time will tell.
We have Obamacare, Alan. We have Obamacare in large part because of her.
We do, and I don't know how much longer we'll have it. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
All right. We are out of time. Thanks, everybody, to Alan and to Rosemary and to Barbara. Have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday, and of course, we'll continue our program with more roundtable after this short break.